This is an example of speech.
All our history.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, free from oversight and free of charge. Thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blowhard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment sections in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have weak thoughts about Trump's SCOTUS pick and Independence Day in Moscow, a Tell Me What to Watch review of Luke Cage Season 2, and closing thoughts with some interesting updates on past hashtag TMWTT topics. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts.
I don't wonder what profit really means. It follows innocence from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fuck it, just do whatever you please. For the night commuters in Uganda, the poor crack babies in Atlanta.
This is Weak Thoughts. Remember to use hashtag TMWTT to alert us on social media platforms. Check out our Facebook page. You can tweet me at Bloated Nemesis. I'm Peter. You can tweet Charles at green_weird. And rate, review, like, share, comment on whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Did I forget one of the weekly laundry tasks?
I don't think so. I think you
okay. All right. So, so I think it was today we are recording Tuesday, the 10th, July 10th evening, that, Trump.
That was last night.
Oh, okay. Last night, I read about it this morning. Trump pardoned, two ranchers out west. Could you tell us
the Hammond brothers? Their case was the pretense for while Malheur Nature Refuge was occupied by the Bundy brothers. These two guys got charged with like 10 different counts involving major wildfires out in Oregon that burned hundreds of thousands of acres of public and private property. He was charged with tampering with witnesses and threatening firefighters, threatening the people who worked at Malheur, or they were rather. It's terrible. I can't think of anybody who deserves a pardon less.
More likely to get a pardon from Donald Trump.
Right. this is like conspiracy bait. I mean, I've said that he's
what do you mean
kind
by
of going crazy, but well, Hammond, I can't think of anybody who...
Well, he doesn't care if the person, like, is guilty, or if they did it justly, or if they were over-punished. I mean, they're the kind of officials that are, like, Sanders or whomever is explaining this to the public might come up with things like that, you know, bullshit reasons that sound, you know, fancy and legal and official. But
you need to stop talking and attacking me for things that I'm not going to talk about.
But he doesn't care, right? You know, I mean, this is a political, if it's a partisan thing, he's all in on it. Like, take, like the Dinesh D'Souza one.
also terrible.
I mean, there like there wasn't even really a reason to do that beyond the guy is the guy. Yeah, the guy is a politically divisive, and he's on Trump's side. So bam. I mean, the guy wasn't currently in prison, you know, right?
Right. He wasn't in prison. He's still rich and talking and writing books.
I mean, he wasn't, honestly, from what I understand of that case, he wasn't really even punished that badly.
No. He got, like, one count when they could have hit him with multiple counts from the charges that they laid on him.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, fuck that guy. Oh, and the Hammond brothers.
Yeah, fuck the Hammond brothers. And to me it's almost like, alright, they did their crimes for whatever reason, fine, deplorable, they did, oh wait, am I allowed to use that word?
They're still in their 5-year sentence or whatever.
Disgusting, destructive things, yeah. But having the president, like, pardon them, it's just so... it's just so dispiriting. Just one of those news stories that you're like, okay, so they're just, this president is actively working against justice and fairness. And
diplomacy. And international humanitarian aid, but I guess we can get to that segment in a minute.
He's working against lots of things, yeah.
It's busy in his head. Have you listened to one of his rants or rallies lately?
No.
Just pure stream of consciousness. Just gibberish.
Oh, man. And then speaking of his chaotic mindscape, in this case there might be a bit of strategy, I guess, but he gave his... seemingly long-awaited, though it's only been like a week, Supreme Court pick in the past day or two, and that was, I guess he did a big thing on TV.
Of course, he wanted to bump Hannity's ratings, because, you know, the Hatch Act and everything.
Wait, did he go on Hannity, or was he on all channels?
He was on all channels, but, people were turning into Hannity.
Do presidents do that in the past? I thought they only announced, like, wars and shit. Or the end of wars.
Yeah, like Obama announced Bin Laden's death.
That one you had to do. I mean, that's like...
Didn't Bush address the country after Katrina? I mean, it's when you fuck up or when you're declaring a war, which I guess is a different kind of fuck up. But
yeah.
Most people wouldn't necessarily agree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he knows that that's like the only thing Trump knows. This is like the only thing keeping him in power. Are the Supreme Court picks, so he has to make a spectacle of it. I mean,
he's made two now, so how much more longevity do you think he has even amongst the right? They've got what they wanted.
How many more Supreme Court picks does he have to make to become president for life? Is that too dark? I don't know. Maybe that's too... it's kind of like a theoretical, hypothetical...
What, the guy who made a career off of not following the law and breaking norms is going to follow the law and follow the norm of getting a peaceful transfer of power?
No. Yeah. Anyway, Brett Kavanaugh, who's on the, I believe, the D.C. Federal
Circuit Court,
was named. He was, I believe, a Bush appointee to that.
He worked for Ken Starr in the Office of Independent Counsel back in the day.
It's kind of a lot of buzz. And then he essentially wrote the Starr report.
Yeah, and then he was assistant counsel for the Bush administration. He apparently helped come up with the detention policies, which he denied it in his nomination hearings. And then Leahy and let me pull up this page again so I know who it is I'm talking about. Yeah, Patrick Leahy and Dick Durbin accused Kavanaugh of misleading the Senate committee during his nomination stemming from the Bush White House detention policy. Hmm. They accused him of lying to them in his confirmation hearing when he denied being involved in formulating the Bush administration's detention and interrogation policies. So yeah, one of the people who may or may not be directly responsible for some of the most heinous, illegal, and evil things that this country has ever done is about to be nominated to the Supreme Court. Thanks, everyone.
Does
this mean this war on terror can end?
Why would that mean it would end?
I mean, this is... Once they used it to get all of the power that they wanted, wouldn't they no longer have a need for it?
There's no end to power grabs.
I suppose. Just keep grabbing until you can stop, right?
Yeah. If only we had our legal advisor Dave's opinion on Brett Kavanaugh.
Give him time. He'll find a way to impress you with more evil.
Whoa, magic, guys.
Now joining us, our chief legal correspondent.
So what do you mean he'll give him more time? Like, mean on the Supreme Court?
Just keep throwing cases at him, and he'll fucking tear down all the traditions he can. In his fucking nomination go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, he's got some bizarre jurisprudential opinions. He's way to the right of most of the court, except for maybe Thomas, but his response, I think he on the D.C. Court of Appeals, he listened to one of the subsequent cases after. He was basically he denied the review process that the Supreme Court had applied to the case and said that you can only go based on history, and based on history you can't ban assault weapons. So he almost completely repudiated Scalia's opinion in D.C. versus Heller.
Wow. That's amazing. But wait, so because history didn't think of something, we can't say anything about it? We can't say anything about something that didn't exist when these laws were created.
I'm sure that his opinion is that obviously flawed.
But you're assuming that there is that he is intelligent, but
well, no, I mean, because people who do stupid things but do them at the high levels of government are really, really good at making them seem not stupid.
And that's why they get those government jobs. But I just want to point out this. During his confirmation hearing in 2006 for the D.C. Court of Appeals, he said he considered Roe v. Wade binding under the principle of stare decisis and would follow the ruling of a higher court. But now he's on that higher court and is able to make the decision for himself. So that's an interesting rhetorical technique on his part.
I mean, they all do that, right?
Theoretically, stare decisis is still a heavy weight on the Supreme Court. It saved Roe v. Wade in the past against a Supreme Court that was to overturn it shortly after Roe v. Wade. And judges with bizarre jurisprudential opinions have turned out to really disappoint the... I'm thinking particularly of Justice Souter, who was put on the court specifically to overturn Roe v. Wade, and was asked what his opinion was. Bizarre explanation that nobody understood until after he wrote a ruling, and that now all of a sudden it's like, oh, he was doubling down on the right to privacy.
So I've kind of had this, to me, this Brett Kavanaugh pick is, okay, so my hot take on this is that it doesn't matter his past, because it's a Trump pick, and it's inherently flawed, and that flaw will create a divisive situation. Whether or not that means he won't, you know, I'm pretty skeptical of him being voted down, though I think it's worth the effort to try.
I mean, if you can get enough Democrats to even agree to it.
And, yeah. Key thing, well, go ahead.
Along the key thing along those lines is going to be watching the confirmation hearings for how precise the questioning is on Trump's loyalty requirements for him.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because we know that he brings in his is going to be his primary concern with any justice he appoints now that he's under legal scrutiny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and what invites that more than Brett Kavanaugh starting out his address with, like, some sort of statement like, this president, no president has ever sought more input and done more research and blah, 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 lie, stroke off the president more. Like, he doesn't have to do that. Really flusters me when
notorious for being deferential to presidential power. That was his that's his major shift in political opinion after the Ken Starr report, is he was the guy that came over from the Republican side and said, no, what we did to Bill Clinton was wrong. The office of the president should be above this.
Which I would argue there is a difference between being deferential to presidential power and being deferential to presidential personality.
Yeah, and there have been some questions raised very subtly in the Hawaii versus Trump opinion about whether the oath of office is working in the case of Trump and whether he's fulfilling his oath to serve the country. And that raises questions of whether he's unlike any other holder of the office.
I would love to see more either, that brought up in Suits, or even just, congressmen hitting hard on, maybe we need a new oath of office, or, I don't know. A lot of it's going to be scattershot, these attacks, but till you find one that sticks. But I think that's a totally relevant point. Like, how can you be deferential to a president that's not... Like, it's one thing to be deferential to the office, but if the person in the office is not executing the office in the... I hesitate to say the correct way, but in the way it was intended.
Well, that's exactly what... That's exactly what Hawaii versus Trump was about. Can you be deferential to a president and in a position where the president, the office, unfettered power that's not supposed to be questioned by the courts, which is the same thing as these pardons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is he obstructing justice with his pardon power? That's something that's wholly reserved to the president, that's above review, and this court, even without Brett Kavanaugh, this Supreme Court is already deferential to the president. In areas like immigration and pardons and international affairs, and they're not going to intrude into presidential prerogatives, even if he is obstructing justice with his pardons.
Well, I mean, but the question with, to me, the most pertinent question are the criminal investigations of him, which I would think they'd be just as deferential, but maybe not.
Worry about the precision of the questioning that Congress is going to give Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. About, how it about with him, what the interviews consisted of, specifically asking him, did Trump ask you for loyalty? Did President Trump ask you to block an impeachment? Did President Trump, talk about what would be if he ended the Mueller investigation?
You can't just do Trump, though. They have to ask, did anyone? Because he's going to ask a guy who's going to ask a guy who's going to ask a guy.
Right.
I mean, that's supposedly the White House, there are varied reports out there about them.
All reports, That's assuming that they've learned something.
Wait, what's assuming they learned something? Oh, that he won't talk directly. Yeah. But supposedly the White House was communicating with Kennedy through intermediaries.
Is this that his son works at Deutsche Bank theory again?
No, not necessarily.
Right.
This is more, I think, political. I mean, go ahead. Okay, I'll go ahead. Every once in a while you'll see reports about, like, Gorsuch recently, but Clarence Thomas, I don't know about Alito or Roberts, I'm not sure, but, like, you know, they're people who, you know, have friends in D.C., and those friends happen to be fucking lobbyists, activists, congressmen.
Thomas's wife a lobbyist?
I don't know if she's a lot. She like has some sort of special thing. Interest group or something.
Yeah.
All right. Did you have anything more to say about Kavanaugh, Charles?
No, I got almost all that I wanted to say.
Yeah. Just to reiterate, I'm very skeptical of the fight against him succeeding. I'd put money on that, even though I can see a pathway to it succeeding. But
I assume Heitkamp and Manchin are going to break ranks and sign on. So
yeah, and that is probably the pathway to it. Yes, to him getting nominated. But I feel as if you could make. Like, the fight itself would intrinsically could benefit them if it was done well and wholeheartedly. But, because, okay, I'm going to get on a tangent here, but whatever, this is a podcast.
This is what they show for.
It's supposed to be a tangent. It's one big 2-hour tangent. Okay, so if you remember a lot of the research that came out after 2016, it was like, you know, and you've seen kind of mixed studies and shit since then, and polling, but one of the biggest, if not the biggest, kind of a unifying thing of Trump support is this idea of, like, the strong man. How conservatives, in general, more so than liberals, kind of want a powerful executive, a big boss, you know. And for whatever fucking reason, Trump is viewed that way by these people. And
I saw him on the TV. Sorry.
And well, yeah, and they've been seeing him on the TV for 30 years. And he's been working on that image, that same fucking image for 30 years, and it succeeded in getting 62 million or whatever it was people to think it, you know, by the time he ran for president. But that strongman thing, that winning thing, that, you know, Charlie Sheen winning, right? The fight itself, even if you lose, can make him seem weak. And that means the next time he can't rely on his previous victories as much. And, you know, think about, like, what's one of the biggest losses, I would argue, of that? Because, like, if you look at, like, their inability to repeal Obamacare,
mm-hmm.
he just turned that around and blamed it on the Congress. But one of the biggest losses was the Muslim ban thing. Now, some of that kind of happened just recently with the third iteration, but, I mean, that's a year and a half later, you know, and it's their watered-down version. I mean, I would chalk that up as essentially a loss.
Yeah, they kind of won that
and
one.
Yeah, but even so, it was won through the courts without much fanfare and publicity. The things that got the publicity was right away was a loss. And they were on their heels for months. But they haven't had big losses like that. They just haven't. They haven't maybe had huge wins. I mean, they've had trouble getting, you know, beyond the tax thing, you know, much. I mean,
I would argue that the tariffs things are kind of a loss. It's like they're just announcing that they are going to lose.
That's yet to be seen. Like, politically, is that something that's getting people riled up? I mean, I think that's still in process, and that totally could be. I mean, you're absolutely right that that could be. I just think it's a little bit still in the process. I mean, I was just listening to the radio, and they were interviewing people who were, like, like potentially going to lose their job, like, directly because of this. Because it's, like, the only, what is it, nail manufacturer in the United States or something, and they use steel, you know? Except they, I guess, import cheap steel, so that's the only way this factory works. And these people legit, just like, they straight up might lose their job directly because of the tariff. And they've been told this by the management of the factory. Everyone there is a Trump supporter and like, I think he's pretty smart. I think he's going to figure this out. You know, like, they don't think they're going to lose their job. They think he's a smart businessman and he knows what he's doing. Like, there are people who really think that. But if you keep hitting him, if you keep giving him losses, or at least the appearance of a loss, damaging him, I really think that stuff will, like, that would be such a great thing for them to be, like, to have, for the administration and the Republicans to have to exert all of this effort for a flawed Supreme Court nominee. Even if they get him in there, yeah, they might have won that battle that, well, last, I mean, that's a big win for them, don't get me wrong. Whoever wins that, it's a big win.
You see, the thing, the reason why push for fucking Trump wins, though, is that the Muslim ban, like, just fucking, shall we say, goes over that middle line. And so, there, the people fight back, and so we get a watered-down version that's still basically a Muslim ban, so his supporters still get what they want. And it empowers him.
Yeah.
And then, with this family separation thing, it's kind of the same bag. I mean,
yeah.
He's only losing slowly, and he's still kind of getting what he wants.
And the family separation, I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, that's arguably, that to me is a damaging thing. It doesn't, you know, it's not all going to happen. He's not going to be taken out of power overnight because of one news story. But,
I mean, that one should have come close, I
think. Well, I mean, he is the president. He does have a complicit Congress, and he has a pretty complicit Supreme Court, fairly, at least. It's yet to be seen how much. But, you know, like, you aren't going to change those things without damaging him. And you can't do it in one fell swoop just in early November of this year, and then 2020. Like, you have to get shit done before that. And you have to fight. You have to, like, you know, it took years of, oh, that's arguable if this is the real, but, like, years of protesting the Vietnam War, you know? Like, it doesn't happen because of one protest in D.C. That's the nature of activism, is that it builds upon itself.
And even then, it's tough to say that, considering that the war ended, like, what, 7 years after Kent State, that the activism was in any way successful.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, as a, like, historian, but, maybe it was. I mean, you know, like, I'm sure we can point to instances where things like that did succeed. Eventually. Granted, I probably shouldn't be making references to the baby boomers as good of
they're not going to say
example of thing.
they are the people who arguably got us into this mess.
Arguably, please. Let's
Ron Johnson.
Yeah, let's talk about my favorite. Least favorite politician. I think he's up there as my least favorite politician, not counting Trump, because he's just his own category. It's like what they used to say about University of Wisconsin in, like, party school rankings. It's like, we don't even rank them because they're their own category. Ron Johnson has appeared in so many articles over the years since he became a senator in, I believe, 2010, from Wisconsin, for our non-Wisconsin listeners. And he and seven other, I think it was six senators and one congressman, if I recall, went to Moscow for the 4th of July to
talk. Yeah, Russian. I assume it's because Trump's meeting with Putin. I don't exactly know what their connection is, but
I don't know why they would. They wouldn't send a congressional delegation for that. That's like the work of the State Department.
Yeah, I'm not saying they were doing that kind of work. I think I'm suggesting something shadier.
You're suggesting some kind of conspiratorial bent?
Maybe. I'm not positive.
I mean, the optics of going to Russia on the 4th of July, as Johnson suggested, that, hey, maybe we should let Russia have the Crimea. Maybe their literal invasion of another sovereign country is... They just get a pass on that, apparently.
Yeah, and apparently all these senators were, like, made fun of on Russian TV for just being, like, weak and, you know, ineffective. And because they, like, sort of, like, supposedly paid lip service to the things they're supposed to pay lip service to. You know, like, the U.S. is against Russians doing X, Y, and Z. But really, we're here to talk, you know. And I don't know what they're... Go ahead.
I was going to say, they got to get business back open. Those Russian mobsters aren't able to get their billions to safe harbors anymore.
Well, supposedly, most of the people they talked with were sanctioned.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean...
So they broke the law? No, I guess they're not sanctioned for, you know, contacts, but you're not really supposed to talk to those people.
Yeah, you're probably not supposed to, like, have them buy you dinner and shit.
Yeah, right? I wonder if that'll show up on their financial disclosures.
Yeah, really? Faberge eggs and shit. So...
Fucking Rojo.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the most glaring thing is the... Since we don't really know what was discussed, nor will we, honestly.
I mean, they didn't meet with Putin, apparently. Like,
but they tried to.
Yeah, they tried, but he was like, no, I'm not meeting with those people.
Like, what? Like, how does our senator, our elected representative, Charles, is just, like, going to Russia to try to meet with Putin on the 4th of July for what? For, like, what's the actual reason? All they're saying is, it's okay to talk. It's okay to talk with enemies.
I mean, that's not wrong, but they've mocked Obama for doing that. Or they mocked Obama for doing that
after
years.
Even beyond the hypocrisy of it, which I agree is glaring, even if you're going to talk with your enemy, it should be, like, clear and open and honest what you're talking about.
And what demands you're making. Like, hey, maybe stop throwing journalists off of hotel balconies, or
yeah, like,
maybe allegedly attacking other countries with chemical weapons, or, I don't know, interfering with other governments through electronic warfare.
Like, I'm not...
Maybe we should talk about space.
I don't want to just outright, like, I don't like on the, like, you see a lot on goddamn Twitter where people are like, every Republican is a traitor and should be executed. It's just like, chill the fuck out. Just like, just chill out. But that, okay, and I'm not even really saying anything about them, but that line of reasoning of, so we have an enemy, but we should talk, we should still talk. Like, I agree with that, but you can't just like, not then say what you're talking about, because then that'll just be used as a defense. Like, every, like, traitor alive will just be using that as a defense. Like, oh.
Right? If you just leave that empty space open, people will just fill it with whatever wild conspiracy theories that they can conjure.
I wasn't selling secrets to the Chinese. I was just talking because talking is good. We can all agree on that, right? Right? Right, jury?
I mean... Maybe if you, like, stayed at the embassy and didn't have any other contact with, like, maybe oligarchs and various other Russian government assets.
I mean, there's been a, like... Oh, that actually brings up some points. Like, who were they with on this trip? Like, it wasn't just, like... It wasn't, like the hangover with eight Republican senators. Like, they... Like, they must...
It's a funny mental image.
Yeah. They must have had, you know, did they just have their assistants? Were they there with, like, anyone from the State Department? Were they there with, like, fucking lobbyists? Were they there with NRA representatives? Were they
meeting with that one huge oligarch over there who's given, like, billions to the NRA, right?
Yeah, I would try and say their name, but they all...
mixed together for me. I wish I kind of like wish I would have taken a little bit of Russian back in the day.
That's an interesting language.
Who knew? Who knew that was going to be so topical in a few years?
I was thinking, I don't think we're going to go to war with Russia or have any problems there. I'm going to learn Chinese instead.
Well, yeah. I mean, circa 2002, 2003, 2004, I mean, Putin was, word on the street was,
he's normal.
Yeah, he was the globalist cuck president of Russia.
He was working on energy deals like the Nord Stream project with Germany, and he was going to open up his economy, and everything was going to be great, and yeah, that didn't necessarily happen the way he should have.
Yeah, and like Bush was looking to his eyes and seeing good, you know.
I saw a kindred spirit. I saw something I could work. What was that quote that he used for Putin? Yeah, he talked about how he looked into his eyes.
Yeah.
Did he whisper sweet nothings or stark compromise into your W?
Yeah, you kind of wonder. It's like, well, and maybe because I think by that point later in the Bush presidency, reports were coming out about Putin, you know, he's cracking down on the billionaires there and killing journalists.
Mostly happened under Obama.
Yeah, it got particularly bad.
Deterioration, yeah.
But I think, because like he did his consolidation of power under Bush, I'm pretty sure. And then
the Russian state was all kind of weak when he took over, so consolidating power wouldn't be hard for him.
Well, but no, it was like, oh, you're rich and you're not going to do whatever I say? Well, I'm throwing you in jail. Like, he did with a bunch of the billionaires.
Oh, like that one guy whose name currently escapes me. I picture his face. But he was later released, right? And sent to Switzerland?
Yeah, but he's still, like, that person's not operated. You know, they're not a wealthy businessman in Moscow or in Russia anymore.
No.
And it's like, it's not like he was doing that type of thing from like, you know, some sort of like socialist, like rash, you know, thing where they were like nationalizing all these businesses and stuff. They're just acting like mafia thugs.
Yeah, you'd like to think that they would understand the public policy and have ideas, but they don't really.
Yeah.
It's just mobsters all the way down.
That's a lot of what I've heard about some of the things I've heard over the years about Putin is that he's
horribly and directly corrupt.
Well, no, beyond his corruption though, like he's not like he's really bad, and his kind of people around him are really bad at like policy and governing. Like they're good at like intimidation and corruption. Profiteering, you know, and, you know, freaking out the Americans, I guess we can add to the list, but they actually don't know how to, like, govern their country well, and, like, their economy is just, like, in shambles.
Mm-hmm. They haven't done anything, or they can't really do anything to address their horrible demographic crash that they're experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah, their economy is in shambles, as you said, and just
So, Ron Johnson, though, is not the only, major politician in the Midwest that is, had some bad news this past week. There was a report that the governor of Illinois is, making, Bruce Rauner is making money, he's a Republican, I believe, which they get a lot of Republican governors out of Illinois, but
yeah, well, down south, you see, the thing about Illinois is that it's kind of a purple state. I mean, they've got a lot of unions, so the statewide stuff, and like, well, I guess maybe more locally,
mm-hmm.
like they got a super majority in their legislature, and like obviously Chicago is a full Democratic Party machine.
Yeah,
but yeah, like downstate Illinois is really Republican, and if you can just get enough people in Illinois, or in the Chicago area specifically, to, you know, vote for the Republican, then you can kind of, well, that gives them their opening that they need. Because I don't even think their gubernatorial elections are held during, like, alongside major federal elections.
Oh, that's probably the big thing right there, then.
Yeah.
Is that it's easy for a voter to differentiate between the party of the governor and the party of the president, or even senator or congressman. And as far as I know, the Republican governors haven't really been, you know, Scott Walker types. Although I don't know much about this guy, so maybe I'm wrong about that.
He's pretty bad, but okay. He's a super rich billionaire.
Of course he is.
And apparently he turned a profit from a healthcare group that services ICE detention facilities. Old immigrant families with children.
And his side of the story is that it's in a blind trust, and he didn't know? I mean, I didn't really follow how he...
He didn't have any influence over decisions. Like, he had to sign the disclosure for him.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
About it, but
that's what I was thinking. Really matter. I mean...
It's like, I'm making money off of what? But no, it's from a company that he previously owned.
So,
from a private equity fund, yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't heard more reports like that. Like this. About
they're trying to track down the companies that are working with the ICE detention facilities. CoreCivic is one that I've heard, like one of the NS Stock Exchange listed ones. And there are a lot of smaller, like basically contractors that are filling in the gaps of their quote-unquote system.
So part of the reason I haven't heard more stories about the politicians having investments in these companies is that we don't know all the companies.
Right. And yeah, we don't know who has ownership stakes, or because a lot of, thanks to places like Delaware, that you can own a company and not actually have to disclose
who owns it. Yeah. All right. Touched on that. I feel as if we should put off this reorganization thing.
I mean, I can hear. Let me read like a.
Well, segment. Yeah. Let's, and then maybe if we want to, we might do a bigger thing later. Let me just preface it. This was, or you go ahead and preface it, I guess.
Yeah, this was a briefing document. It's like outlines. It's delivering government solutions in the 21st century, reform plan and reorganization recommendations. This was promulgated by the White House and went through OMB review and Executive Order 13781, entitled Comprehensive Plan for Reorganizing the Executive Branch, highlighted the need to evaluate the organizational constructs that supports today's mission delivery objectives. And that statement right there gets to one of the big fucking points that I have with this piece is that they just keep chanting the word mission. Like, obscure missions, like, for obscure government organizations, like Health and Human Services, and like, people that have no relation to the military, or law enforcement, or security, are trying to frame their programs and their objectives and what they do as missions to get attention from a security-minded fucking executive authority.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, their benefit, they want to increase, or let me get three words that they had, the principles. It's mission, service, and stewardship. Like, put the right people on the right mission, make sure the services are up to 21st century standards, and the stewardship part is making sure that they're effective stewards of taxpayer funds. So yeah, they keep talking about this like it's just a business.
Yeah,
they keep getting into go ahead.
Well, so just a little bit of kind of background to like view this in, which is like they talked like I think even before he was inaugurated. Or at least right around that, he was talking about, which I bet Jared Kushner had nothing to do with this, but he was talking about Jared Kushner doing this. And so this was like something they've been planning from the start. I think he put out an executive order about it. I haven't really heard this as a big conservative thing for years, though I think they nitpick about some of this. And some of it's like, you know, a little bit common sense. Like, I just went past this one. They have an image of a woman handing someone fresh fruit and vegetables, or taking a basket of fresh fruit and vegetables. I can't tell.
Oh, yeah.
and they quote Kenneth from Washington State, which I don't know who that is. I don't know. Anyways, quote, all agencies that regulate food safety should be under one department, preferably under the Department of Agriculture, according to
no fucking way.
Kenneth from Washington State.
Department of Commerce, because a lot of there have to be there have to be there are government regulations mandating standards, especially for food, and this gets doubly more complicated when you're bringing in food from other countries. Admittedly, Department of Agriculture probably inspects that stuff, but the Department of Commerce, obviously, and maybe even state, have some role in that process. Not to mention Health and Human Services, or
US. Well, okay, so the first thing I want to say is some of it is, like, common sense, but as I think you're rightly bringing up is that, you know, like, a big, giant, sprawling government isn't just about, like, organized according to common sense. Like, there are reasons certain things are here and there, And I'm not saying that a comprehensive look at all of it shouldn't be done, but
what they produced from their look out of it was something like more like Sauron would have seen through the
Well, I think as you point out is that they're using like a business, they're looking at this like a business, and they're speaking of it like a business, and that
no rule. Yeah.
And that strikes me at that the real goal here is not like efficiency for the sake of better serving the public, but it's efficiency to cut money to make it smaller so that it serves the public less, and so that those savings can be given as tax cuts to the rich because of who's proposing it and their track record. You said it went through the Office of Management
Budget. Yeah,
I mean that's run by Mick Mulvaney, who's like one of the kings of this type of double talk shit about, you know, we were just trying to give rich people more money. And if they didn't have this track record, then, you know, maybe you can give them the benefit of the doubt with, like, a business-type approach. But really, they are just trying to, you know, help people. But they don't, they haven't earned that respect.
Yeah, they want to cut at least one cabinet level of department.
Which one?
By combining education and labor into the Department of Education and the Workforce.
You know, God fucking damn it.
They want to move the USDA's SNAP program into the Department of Health and Human Services, which will be renamed to the Department of Health and Public Welfare. So maybe your doctor will need to prescribe you a healthy diet for you to get government assistance.
Man, you know, the thing with the education and workforce, though, that reminds me so much of here in Wisconsin, Governor Walker a couple years ago trying to change something called the Wisconsin Idea, and that is like a mission statement of our higher education system here in Wisconsin. And
public law.
And it speaks to a sort of intrinsic benefit of learning, but also how the Wisconsin system is meant to help the whole state. And they wanted to put something in there, I don't remember the exact language, but about it being like training ground for employees, you know, for a workforce. Yeah. And it just was so like greedy and self-serving to that class of people. And not the labor class, but the, you know.
Like, that's just saying, hey, we're going to turn the state over to the rich people.
Yeah, it's like your whole goal, the goal of you being educated is to be an employee for someone. Which, yes, of course, that's what most people are going to do. Like Republicans don't, like, you know, like, I get that. I'm not unreasonable. But that doesn't mean that there aren't kids out there who are going to own their own thing. Like, we want them to do that. Or are going to, like, discover something. Are going to write the great American novel. You know? Be fucking president. Maybe they were, you know, went to a public university, a public school.
Hey, maybe not everybody needs to make $1 million. Maybe just be happy with a middle-class life, or just do you, you know?
And you know what? Fake fucking populist President Trump, this bullshit about the Supreme Court nominee having to be from an Ivy League school and not even one of the bad Ivy League schools.
Like, what the fuck?
Like, come... Like, he wouldn't do the guy from University of Michigan because he went to the University of Michigan, who has produced Supreme Court justices before, by the way. And... Oh, God damn it. God damn it. Like, he's like, Obama never would have said that. And Obama went to Harvard Law, right?
Yeah. Oh, and they want to give... Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, they did nominate... I think Kagan was from Harvard. I don't know about Sotomayor. I mean, yeah. Obviously, it's a really good school, so it's going to produce Supreme Court justices. But, like, to make that, like, in and of itself a qualification... Like, that's the end qualification, not the means to the end qualification. That is just unacceptable.
Yeah, get the heck out of here. You're not draining anything, you pseudo-populist whatever.
Just, it's so fake, and I don't know how... Like, why does it seem... Like, who's the type of person who can figure out how to message this shit? Because... Like, to me, it's hard for me to come up with, the thing to just tell people that'll change their mind. And, because, like, to me, it's all so obvious.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they need to hear it from certain people. Like, Alexandria Ocasio seems to have pretty strong amount of charisma.
Yeah.
Bernie, of course, can fill stadiums still.
Yeah, there are individuals who are good at... messaging, but still, I mean, Ocasio is not running, you know, in, like, northern Wisconsin here or something.
She'd win.
You think she'd win in, like, Waukesha?
Oh, fuck yeah. Well, Waukesha's, like, east Wisconsin, but yeah, if she, like, tried to run up in, like, the red parts of the state, she'd win.
I don't know.
I think so.
Well, then we need more people like that in those parts who are running for office.
We do. And we need to support a broader party platform and people who can get the message across to people in their neighborhoods. Like, hey, everybody, government is to help all of us. It gives us roads and healthcare and the military, I guess. Yeah, anyway.
All right. Well, I feel that anger. I feel that righteous anger. So let's come back and talk about Luke Cage. Luke Cage came out on Netflix a week or so ago, and it was pretty dope. What were you talking about, the reading list for that?
So, the one thing about Luke Cage, like, you know, Tony Stark is always tinkering. But Luke Cage is always reading a book.
He is. Good. Yeah.
And, yeah, one thing I've kind of been trying to think about putting together is the Luke Cage reading list of all the books that he's shown reading. No. So I know he reads, like, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and, like, they literally debated poetry and black literature in the first season.
Yeah. There's also an element of the name drop, so... The only note I took from the show was a line describing Mariah Dillard, which was, she's bougier than Lawrence Otis Graham, but she's got the tenacity of Frank Lucas. Now, I should have known who Frank Lucas was, but I looked it up, but I had to look up who Lawrence Otis Graham is.
Yeah, who is that?
He's a New York Times bestselling author from Harvard Law, New York City socialite for black folks, essentially. But highly educated, you know, bougie. He's bougie.
Okay.
He's a bougie Harlem dude.
Huh.
And then, you know who Frank Lucas is?
No, but I think I do. But reminder.
It's the essentially who Denzel Washington played in the movie American Gangster. He was the guy who brought heroin to New York from Vietnam, I believe.
Yeah. Direct flights.
He gets referenced in like Nas songs and shit like that. Yeah, it was. Well, what the movie says it was in caskets or something, but it like they were like, no, we just put it in the pallets that the caskets were on. I think I read a quote from them when I was looking up about Frank Lucas.
Well, even he wouldn't destroy. Yeah.
Anyway, Luke Cage season 2. It features kind of the Mariah Dillard character becoming more of a primary villain, and it also
trying to go legit.
And what?
And trying to go legit.
Eh.
Sort of.
More so, though, going less legit in the end. Bushmaster is the other, kind of super villain in the show. He, is kind of proves to be like a formidable, physical, nemesis for Luke. And Mariah is kind of a, formidable, sort of kingpin for him to go up against. Way more formidable than Cottonmouth in the end. Although maybe that's only because she killed him in the first season. Anyway, so I don't know what any kind of thematic takeaways.
I thought the themes were a little bit tighter in this season than in the first season.
Sure,
like, I kind of lost focus towards the end of first season.
I agree. The end of the first season was weaker, yeah.
It's kind of great to see people get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I mean, the fact that there isn't, like, I don't know, Falcon or any of the Avengers that kind of are worried, that aren't involved in apparently the superhero and supervillain drama in their own city is a little weird.
Yeah, well, there's obviously a meta reason for that, but it's interesting that I actually just read something, some sort of kind of like, not like, this gets posted online as like fan theories, but I don't know that they're necessarily theories, it's just like little tidbits that, you know, can kind of connect up, but don't really mean that much in the end. But anyway, it's that. So there is some reference to the Sokovia Accords, though really, really loose, in the Netflix shows. And in the rationale for Luke not being registered, because I think a cop in this season refers to him as, like, he's a deadly weapon, an unregistered deadly weapon, or something like that. And
oh, that's what that was about. Okay,
yeah, right. Yeah, because I thought that too. I was like, what?
Unregistered. Like, what, you need a serial number?
Fuck. And so, yeah, someone online pointed that out as, like, kind of a reference to the Sokovia Accords. And their logic for him not, like, for, you know, essentially S.H.I.E.L.D., the government, whatever, not taking him down, Iron Man, is because he is super invulnerable, and he's broken out of major prisons already, and he's really popular where he is. He is the hero of Harlem. He's not a masked vigilante. He's open about it. He walks the streets. The people like him. The police, though they have mixed feelings, generally get along with him. He's in the police station all the time, you know?
Right. He doesn't kill people. That's got to be good.
Yeah, and he hasn't, like, nothing he's done has led to, like, big-time destruction. Or even, like, in, you know, like, he's kind of been associated with big, you know, big-time destruction.
Like that Chinese restaurant.
Or even some of the shit that happened in some of the Daredevil stuff has actually been pretty... Yeah, I wouldn't blame him. it's not like one of those things where the hero like fucked something up really bad, but anyway, I thought that was a kind of little interesting sort of world building exercise. And I don't know if the thing that I read got into it, but I would kind of extend it to the people of, like, the fact that this kind of comes full circle at the, not full circle, but it kind of comes to fruition at the end, which is the end of the series, the season, which Luke really is restricting himself to Harlem. And so I think because he doesn't really pose a threat of any kind to people outside of Harlem, and they kind of over time maybe are realizing that, that he's not going to have much trouble from outside of Harlem. Beyond Bushmaster coming in from Brooklyn, I mean, you know, but that's pretty close. And he was coming into Harlem.
Yeah. He was going to get Harlem.
But yeah, that was his goal. So that's the only reason he really came into confrontation with Bushmaster. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think he... I think that's like the rationalization for the meta contractual different company reason that you don't see the Falcon involved or whoever. But you do bring up the good point that it's like Avengers, you know, they don't help out when there's like a string of murders in the hood.
Hell, even a supervillain wandering around the hood with like high powered weaponry, like hammer check, right?
Wasn't the guy in the first one using hammer tech too? That was like his thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Which is like which is an Iron Man villain.
Okay. Racist statues to Tony Stark. No, probably not. Not really.
Well, I think it's kind of like just the Avengers see themselves as like, I mean, especially now that they've, you know, we'll see exactly what happens in the fourth Avengers, but, you know, assuming Thanos doesn't just win in the end, it's like, okay, so now you've taken on Thanos, so now you can't, like, help a brother in the hood? Like, oh, you defended the Earth, but, like, can you defend our neighborhood? I don't know. So I think it'd be cool if there were, like, Captain America stories like that.
Absolutely. There should be a Captain America TV show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Watch that. Watch it twice.
Yeah, he's the rare character that can work like sort of larger than life and kind of like down on the personal level.
Helping kitties out of trees and
yeah, exactly. But back to Luke. So what were some of those themes that you picked up on in this season, particularly ones that maybe were different than the first season?
Luke is way more comfortable with his power than he was in the first season.
Yeah.
I would say. He's actually getting stronger, as they point out. He kind of takes a different attitude towards it. I mean, not exactly mercantilist, but not entirely idealistically altruistic, you know?
Yeah.
Like he was in the first one.
Yep. I think to me is the main theme of the series, which is kind of, I don't want to say even like realizing that like being the complete idealist hero doesn't work, but that because I mean it can work at times.
You got
at least
$1 billion to
well grow. Yeah, but I mean I think the idea that he's going is that if he really wants to not, if he wants peace, he might have to compromise, which is pretty much a lesson of diplomacy, you know, like on a national level or political level.
The criminals are going to keep doing what they're doing.
And yeah, there just has to be a little bit of a give along with your take. And I think that's that kind of dealing with those realizations, coming to those realizations, parsing out like what is okay, what's not. It, you know, and I don't even know that he comes to the right conclusions at the end, but I think that's the main theme of the show. What I thought was interesting is, to me, there was like text and subtext about the Black experience in the first season, like all the time, I thought, at least in the first half. It was, like, really, really prominent. And I thought in this one, there was actually...
Go ahead. I was going to say, it's a little watered down, I mean, but they make an interesting contrast between the experience of the descendants of African-American slaves and the experience of recent immigrants who also happen to be African.
Yeah. And I think that there's less, like... referential subtext, and it's more actually just characters talking about it, which is
We have a lot of conversations about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's characters talking about, like, skin color, and, you know, like, the Stokes and the, I can't remember what the Jamaican family, what are the Jamaican family called? Whatever Bushmaster's families. Yeah, well, that's what their gang is called. Is that what their last name was?
Family name. No, I don't think it's... maybe not. I mean...
Yeah, whatever. But I thought a lot of the race stuff, yes, there was less of it, which I don't know if that's good or bad. I feel like there's more to say, so I kind of wish there was more, but at the same time, I like that it's about... It's not just about that. So, I don't know. I'm somewhere in between on that one. But I enjoyed the characters talking about that shit more. Whereas I often, you know, like things that are kind of more subtle and in the subtext of a show or movie. And I thought it was just well done. Like, the characters talking about it always felt natural. It didn't feel forced. It felt like this is what that person would say right then. Like, Mariah has, like, multiple comments in the show. You know, she's using the N-word at select times. She's talking about shades of skin color. Not shades skin color, but a person's shade of skin color. I mean, and then actually bringing up, like, shades, actually bringing up his relationship with Comanche was kind of interesting. Because, like, Mariah's, like, accusing him of being gay with the guy.
Right? That's, homosexuality in the Black community, it's...
Yeah, it's I don't know. And he doesn't, like, deny it or confirm it. But he also kind of makes a comment about, like, prison is different than the real world, and so...
Yeah, he's like, I'm not actually gay. He's like, bro, you broke my heart.
There is a lot going on in the show, and I totally agree. I think the best takeaway is that the show kind of gets better throughout the season, whereas I think the first season definitely whimpered out at the end. It was just like, oh, there's a bad guy and a good guy, and they're fighting a lot, and there wasn't a hell of a lot more beyond that. Yeah, I don't know. I'd recommend it. I'm trying to think where I'd put this in the pantheon.
I think it's slightly better than the first season, at least, in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I have called the first season my favorite. Did I like this? It definitely was better from beginning to end. I thought there was less, fun moments. It was a little more... The tone was a little more dramatic and serious, which, I don't know, I'm a kind of a sucker for the fun moments in comic book shows and movies. Like, for example, in the first one, when they had Method... When Method Man was rapping about him, like, he freestyled about Luke Cage. Though they do have... Actually, let's talk about the music. I mean, we do hip-hop test drives on the show here. KRS is in the show. Ghostface is in the show. There's some band that I don't even know who they were. I mean, a couple of the bands in the show. There's like a reggae band that was just fucking, fucking dope.
The blues guy?
Oh, the blues guy, yes. Oh my god, he's good.
I mean, the music in the show is always really
cool. I was actually thinking of just getting, I was going to get the soundtrack here. It's so good. It's so good. And they play whole songs, which I love. I love that they're playing. I mean, they work in these live performances that happen in the club in the show. There's a name for that. The cinema school graduates, film school graduates will know what I'm talking about. But they're using that sound, and then they cut between that and other events happening. And it's so well done. But what I like is that you get to hear these whole songs. It's not just like, oh, you get to hear like the hook playing for 5 seconds.
And here's a bar while they have a, or like two or three bars while they have a door open, or they're like doing the splash scene for, or the splash cut for another scene.
Yes. Yeah, and so, man, the music is, actually, now that we're bringing up the music, I do think I will put this as my favorite Netflix season. Because the music kind of made up for the lack of fun. Like, it would get to a point in almost every episode they have a big musical number, or not like a dance thing, like a not like a Berkeley musical from the 30s or something, but man, and even like some of the personal I mean, they sort of we've actually done a good job with that of not really spoiling, so I don't want to do, but they sort of like wrote out wrote out Claire a little bit. I thought it was a little forced, because it's like, okay, she's never been in every episode of any of these shows, but she's been in every show. So I assume I don't really know why they. It's like they have. I don't know. Anyway.
It's for Daredevil.
Yeah.
It's so that she's going to be in the Caribbean when Daredevil is out there and trying to get his memory back.
Wait, you think he's in the Caribbean?
Yeah. He was like a French monastery, a French convent, right? At the end of Defenders? I'm sorry, I won't.
No, that's fine. You can spoil a show that's been out for a while. No, I was. I didn't think that was in the Caribbean.
That's the impression that I got.
Oh. You know, that happens in the comic, and I cannot remember where that was.
Yeah, there's a whole plot about it.
I wish I could remember where that was. I thought it was just... Yeah, you're right, though. Anyway, yeah, we'll find out, I guess. I think they're
not doing more Defenders yet, but I know they're doing more Daredevil, obviously.
Daredevil season 3 is maybe even done filming, or they're making it right now.
Iron Fist? Are they doing more Iron Fist?
I don't know, but he was his one or two, I can't remember if it was one or two episodes in Luke Cage was awesome, and I really enjoyed that. And I in general have liked him in The Defenders, and really liked him in Luke Cage this season. I thought that was actually the most fun episode. I enjoyed having a kind of action balance, like someone to fight with Luke Cage, but then also like talk with him and to him, and like someone that like Luke Cage sort of argued with, but still got along with. And
oh, and Luke, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Iron Fist 2 is coming out soon.
Okay, so Iron Fist, they are doing Iron Fist 2.
Filming, yeah.
Okay, I never watched Iron Fist 1.
What?
I started.
Was great.
I think you're one of the few people that I've heard say it's great. I should try to do it. I just got like an episode and a half in, and I'm like, I hate this guy. I couldn't stand him. And maybe that's kind of what the point is? I don't know.
I don't understand why you didn't like him, but...
He was...
I thought it was kind of well-written.
Yeah, and I don't even mean it in, like, that point, like, where it's like he's an asshole. I just mean, like, I found him to be unwatchably... so lacking in charisma on TV that I couldn't watch him. I couldn't watch the show. And then everyone started telling me that, like, nah, it's not that good. Like, who were further than me, so I just never went with it. I'll try and go back. At least before the second season comes out, I should. I mean, if they're doing all these other seasons, then I bet they're going to do Defenders after that comes out.
Yeah, I was just looking online. People were saying it's not in the works. But I find that difficult to believe. I mean, maybe Netflix hasn't optioned it, but now all of the characters are getting another season?
Yeah, I think it was popular. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of a tough story to, like, force.
Yeah.
God damn, though. I mean,
well, they need to get
like,
get
Punisher is still out there.
Right.
And
like, they still have major villains that they could, you know, get together and... Oh, and YouTube is, or Punisher 2 is coming too.
God. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like he should be folded into the universe. Not to the universe, but like to the Defenders specifically. Yeah. Even if he's not like on them, just like, I don't know, like if not a nemesis, I don't even know what.
I mean, there's no way you could get that guy in the same room as Iron Fist and Luke Cage, right? I'm pretty sure even Jessica Jones would have a problem with that.
Oh, Jessica Jones would have a big problem with Luke Cage. With Punisher. She has a big something else for Luke Cage.
Yeah.
No, yeah, with Punisher, you could just picture like her, like, you know, saying something like, "Oh no, I am not going in with Rambo on this," or something. You know, some smart ass comment. All right. Anything else you wanted to say? Good, bad, noteworthy.
Season 2.
Well, stay in and watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't go out and watch it unless you.
Stay in and watch it.
Bring your phone outside, but there's way too many mosquitoes. But we're recording now. Actually, I might just edit this back into the other part, which is I did want to say, for the Luke Cage thing, Mariah Dillard, the actress who plays her, which I want to look up and get her name, she's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Alfre Woodard, she was awesome in season 2. I thought she was like a fine actress in season 1, didn't really, but she's like a scene stealer in season 2. Like, you can get why she's, like, a force of nature. So, anyways, I just wanted to get that out there. So, got some closing thoughts here.
Start with the good news or the bad?
So let's do good news first.
Okay.
And
the Ethiopian Prime Minister went to Asmara, Eritrea, and met with their dictator. Like, they're moving really forward on this peace process incredibly quickly. Like, they're talking about restoring direct communications links and opening roads and allowing Ethiopia access to the ports of Eritrea.
And
like, people have started going home from their respective sides.
That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, right? Really good news.
It's interesting how kind of, as, you know, we talk about international news pretty much every week on this podcast, and, you know, generally bad, right? And, you know, somewhere in the corner of the world, there's, like, some people who are making life better, hopefully?
Yeah, that Ethiopian Prime Minister seems to be trying to make things better.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Do you know, is there any kind of, like, worries or roadblocks that, you know, kind of haven't been figured out yet, or?
There's the United Arab Emirates base in Eritrea that they use to support their operations in Yemen, but Ethiopia's prime minister is probably at least okay with the UAE and the Saudi coalition.
Okay.
But I don't know, thinking about it, there might also be some blatant partisan advantage. This guy might be trying to rally allies against Egypt and Sudan over the Nile River. And, you know, not having Eritrea as the main supporters, you know, frees up some forces.
Do you think
they're going to start filling up the reservoir?
Oh, that hasn't happened yet?
I think they were going to start sometime this summer, but I haven't heard about it.
Okay. So they are worried about potentially
Well, I mean, potentially they had CC's. There was a recording released last year, the year before, of CC and his personal staff just like discussing outright attacking Ethiopia and the dam construction project.
Yeah, so he needs it. He needs allies somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that'll be kind of shitty if all this good news turns towards bloody war.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we turned that bad.
Oh, sorry.
It was good news while it lasted. Okay, what was the bad news specifically? You were referring to the North Korea? Or?
Well, the North Korea is just kind of stupid news, but the racists. Like, I remember
I
pointed out on the podcast how the one good thing about the Bush administration is that we're going to know very well and very clearly who the racists are, because they're going to offer the fact that they are racist to people without being asked about it. And we see this with people like Permit Patty, like all the people who are barbecuing while black, and
like
the two guys in Starbucks in Philadelphia who got kicked out because they were black.
Yeah.
And then against Puerto Ricans, too, because as I was telling Pete just now, there was a video from Now This that a woman was getting harassed at the park pavilion that she had a permit for and rented, and some old white racist white guy basically physically intimidated her away, and the police, who was also in frame, mostly stood off to the back and didn't seem to intervene.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, wasn't he saying something like, how dare you wear a Puerto Rican shirt in the United States of America?
Puerto Rico is not a state. It's not a state of America. And it's like, it just went off in some weird tangents. It's like, the world won't change America. Like, dude, what the fuck? What the fuck does that have to do with her having a picnic in your park?
Maybe his parents were murdered by someone from Guam.
That's weirdly specific.
Well, it's a U.S. territory that's not a state.
Oh, I suppose.
Hey, speaking of harassing people, there's this kind of student org that spans some campuses called Turning Point USA, and there was a little write-up in... had a weird name.
Wait, they're associated with the Koch brothers, right?
I wasn't sure about that. It did strike me. It didn't say it in this article, but man, I thought it when I read it. They're funded by, where is the stupid thing in the article that says it? Well, first of all, let me say, this was in Pacific Standard by Arvind Dilawar. It's mostly about the University of Illinois. Bringing up Illinois, it's probably the first time I've ever talked about Illinois twice on the podcast. There's a website called Campus Reform. It's a mouthpiece of Turning Point USA, and they have these like alt-right Breitbart shitheads around the country, and they are harassing people on campuses. I mean, they're talking. This article brings up allegations of stalking, recording without someone's knowledge,
which is illegal in some states.
Yep, harassing. This guy in the article. Who is like a Air Force veteran, it's like three kids, getting a PhD in history or whatever it was, and he brings like a binder of all of this stuff to his meeting with the Office of Student Conflict Resolution at the University of Illinois, and they were like, we don't want to see any of it. This is the guy who was accusing him of her. What happened was, let me back up for a second, this guy, Khan, was at an event, and I believe he was speaking. Valdez, the guy who is part of the conservative group, yelled something about, shouldn't you be at home watching your kids? Khan took this as a subtle threat, so he went and approached the guy, and the guy put a camera in his face and was like putting it in his face. I guess to egg him on is what I'm reading it as. And Khan, I sort of, unfortunately, but can't blame him, took the bait and took the phone and then went away, but he just like then dropped the phone. And Valdez is like,
he took this shit far. He took it to the Office of Student Conflict Resolution. There's a lawsuit now at this point. I mean, it's just spiraled out of control. And this office at the university does not want to... they are essentially aren't listening to this con at all. And this Valdez guy is part of a group that just keeps upping it and upping it and pushing it and pushing it. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because, not just because of the kind of racist harassment angle, but kind of ties into, we've talked now a couple times on the show recently about the kind of disingenuous nature of the free speech advocates on the particularly the far right. And this is just, I just thought this was a really good example because it takes place on a campus, which is where a lot of their attacks on the left emanate from, in terms of them claiming the left is against free speech. And, yeah, I don't know. There's a great quote at the end from this con. "I'm a working-class military veteran with three children who makes less than a living wage. And these billionaire-funded rich white boys have decided to spend all this effort making a name for themselves by harming me and my family."
Yeah, it's really petty and fucking vindictive what they do a lot of the times. It's difficult.
This kind of goes back to, man, what I've been just... I cannot get it out of my head the past few weeks. It's that we are in a culture war, and the other side has known this for 20 years. We just thought...
they were trying to instigate it.
Well, I... Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think they were trying to turn the slow, steady progress of society into a war. Yes, I would agree with that. And they wouldn't view it that way, of course. They would view things like Roe v. Wade and, you know, gay people like Will and Grace as like instigating the culture war. But it's upon us, and they have been training for decades.
Ugh.
And we've just been, like, trying to, like, slowly push society, you know, just kind of like, doop-de-doo, just moving along here, okay, rights, let's go, got some rights for you over there, we got some rights for you, okay, just give us time, we're working on it. And little did we know, because I don't know, I mean, I'll tell you, like, 10 years ago, I just thought it was, like, no, they're just like relics. They're just, oh, they'll get over it eventually.
They're just super riled up about something that is obvious, like common sense policy.
But they've been training. They've been, you know, taking apart their rhetorical guns and putting them back together and at the firing range practicing for their metaphorical rhetorical guns. And I don't know, man.
Almost advocating for violence,
but they're good at it. Like, they're good at this shit. They egged this guy on. They knew what they were doing. They had recording devices. I didn't mention this, but they used what was recorded, I think, on that phone and then other phones nearby, and put out like a heavily edited piece to make this con guy look bad. And looked like he was harassing, like the harassment was going the other way, which is a lot like fucking James O'Keefe, you know?
Yeah. Project Veritas, correct?
Yeah, that type of stuff. They're using like media and our perceptions against us, and it's to turn us into fucking, it's either to defeat us or turn us into their mindless zombie racist monsters, and
or at least reveal which side we're on.
And if they have a minority rule, by the way, they don't even have to win everyone over.
They don't want to.
Well, yeah, because yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, god damn it,
they're willfully ignorant. And yeah, anyway,
yeah, so Was that bad enough to end the show on, or should we talk about?
We have Pompeo in North Korea.
Yeah. Can you tell me about that?
Prepare for big diplomatic meetings. President Trump didn't mention any kind of like denuclearization, verifiable or otherwise. And now that he's released subsequent statements, like, or especially Pompeo is like, no, it's, we included verifiable denuclearization efforts as part of the proposal. And the Kim regime is like, no, absolutely not. And the point that I want to make about this is that it's kind of rich that yes, North Korea does need to denuclearize, and I'm not entirely sure that Kim doesn't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he wants to on some level.
You've been saying that for a while.
Go ahead. Why would they get rid of their weapons when they haven't agreed with any kind of armistice with South Korea? And the second they do, they're going to have to worry about the Chinese opinion on a united Korea.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure the South Koreans will want the North to get rid of their nuclear weapons in that case.
Yeah. So if we're going to unify, like, you get our vibrant capitalist economy and we get your nukes.
Korea!
I got bad news for you on the nukes. We got rid of those, man.
Yeah, because, well, the South Korean president, Kim, or Park, hasn't really made a point of that, to my knowledge. He's just trying to get these negotiations moving along so that,
mm-hmm.
you know, we might see a unified Korea at some point, maybe.
Yeah.
And yeah, Trump is an idiot for, like, I don't need to prepare. I'll look into his soul and get absolutely nothing from him.
Dude, this... What a joke. Like, his international diplomatic skills. Like, we're at this stage now. This has been going on a little bit now. And we're not like, you know, that, remember that week before he met Kim? It's just like, just such bullshit coming from the right. Just like a torrent, a wave of it. And then people on the left are like, well, he is talking to them. Maybe this is good.
Yeah.
He is an utter... utter failure and a joke as a diplomat. What I will say, though, is I think having someone in the office who has his mind committed to, which I guess is debatable whether or not he has his mind committed, but he pretended to for a while there, but has their mind committed to something like this, that's something international, and someone who is willing to, am I going to say something nice about Trump? I don't know. I might. Someone who's willing to make some concessions. Now, he didn't really, because we didn't really make concessions, but he sort of, like, acted like he was giving concessions. He, like, said he was, but, you know, nothing was on paper.
Yeah, they didn't actually write anything down, apparently. So
yeah. Yeah, but like, I just mean that. All I'm trying to say is, this notion that America like has to win constantly. Like sometimes, maybe we just need to walk into, you know, this country that we're having trouble with and be like, hey, okay, we fucked up on something in the past, and you guys fucked up too, but we fucked up. You fucked up. Let's move forward. Like, it's kind of like fighting with your girlfriend or something. It's
right.
It's
we
like
stop fighting about this. We're not going. Nobody.
It's like, you know, everyone just has to kind of say they're sorry and admit some fault. And I think often American diplomacy seems too prideful. And if I was living in another country around the world, that would bug me. And
I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah, and now that that all being said, Trump, even the part that I'm kind of trying to compliment him on, he's like really bad at that too. So like he's not getting anything down on paper. He's not really like he's not saying the, you know, I'm sorry, or he's not saying like he's not saying not that I really know, I don't know what would be apologized to North Korea for. I don't know. I mean this more in a general sense. But
like dropping more bombs on them than we did in the entire Pacific Theater in World War II?
Should we be sorry about that?
I mean, it seems a little disproportionate.
I don't know. I mean, we didn't, like...
We killed 20% of the population of the country.
Yeah, and we still didn't win. And they did start that war, right?
I mean, it's arguable that the Americans supporting the South Korean dictator who is probably going to invade. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's clear cut.
Okay, but they did actually invade.
Yeah, there was a war.
I mean, the North Koreans actually crossed the 45th parallel?
Yeah, but the 38th, but
the 38th, sure.
The South Koreans would probably have invaded if the North Koreans didn't, so.
Okay, well. But I mean, that sounds like Confederacy talk. Well, the Lincoln was going to attack us, so that's why we had to attack Sumter. It's like, but you are the ones who actually did attack Sumter. Sumter?
Fort Sumter.
Sumter. I mean, it just, like, you know, it's like a, I don't know, who shot first? Like Han shot first, but Greedo was going to shoot him, so I...
Is North Korea Han Solo in this situation? So that's okay.
Well, you're saying that. I'm saying, but Han did shoot first. Like, he did just murder that guy.
Yeah, he absolutely murdered
that guy. So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. Hey, these things are complicated. I fully admit that.
But one other point about this North Korean problem is that Bolton is a master bureaucratic player. So he could have, like, just made Trump give Trump basically no preparation and, like, the debriefings that he needed to go into that meeting because he didn't want the effort to succeed.
Oh.
So this could also be a prelude for something far worse. Like, Bolton Unbounded.
He probably could just get Trump to, like, sign some documents, like, starting all this, and Trump just won't even know. And then they'll, like, no, you signed this, and you were really proud of signing it, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, I was. And Trump will, like, defend it to his death, even though he was tricked into it.
Is that a depressing enough note to end on?
Yeah, let me just quick bring up, if you check out the New Yorker, do I have the article up here? The New Yorker, Adam Entis, he wrote a piece that we've talked about at least once on the show that was about the kind of Middle East plan of the Trump administration. And it brings up in that article an infamous map that was shown to Obama and Secretary John Kerry at the time in, like, 2015, 2016, about Israel going into the West Bank.
Israeli's presence in the West Bank.
Yeah, and essentially how it is preventing a two-state solution.
That's a disgusting map, isn't it?
Yeah, and it does, when you think about it, because when I first looked at it, I just looked at the picture and I kind of forgot about what it was telling me. I was like, okay, yeah, most of it's Israel, a little bit's Palestine. But then when you're like, oh, that's supposed to be mostly Palestine there.
Yeah, more Palestinians live in that area than Israelis.
Yeah, and how it's, and then you'd think, like, okay, so how would you do a two-state solution? Well, that's pretty much impossible.
Yeah, absolutely impossible. We've got Jewish-only roads that run between these Palestinian communities in the West Bank.
And it gets you to think, like, what do you do with that realization? I don't think the Obama administration knew what to do with that.
I mean, maybe not give him $38 billion to fucking fund this.
Well, okay, but
there are things.
It's... I don't know. It's far away from being a two-state solution. I don't know. I'm not saying, like, just give Israel everything they want, which is what the Trump administration is doing. Like, I'm by no means condoning that, of course. Although, by the way, Gaza's held together, though. Mm-hmm. Like, Gaza's a continuous...
Yeah, because... Ehud, or not Ehud Barak, but what's the guy's name? Ariel Sharon pulled out the settlers from Gaza in 2006. They were in a security cordon around Gaza than allowing Israelis there. Because it was the population was so small that it was easy to pull them out.
Sure. All right. Well, this has been Closing Thoughts. This has been Tell Me What to Think. Weekly podcast about news and...
culture?
And culture. Mostly depressing news, though. And... at least we always have depressing news to end it with.
This episode brought to you by whiskey.
And
why not?
I mean, I don't have any at home, but I got plenty of beer. So, actually, shit, we probably have some vodka, maybe. Vodka when you're when you're feeling really shitty, but don't have whiskey. Anyway. You can find me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. You can find Charles on Twitter at @green_weird, #TMWTT. I don't think I said this in the beginning of the show, but TMWTTPOD@gmail.com to contact the show. Use #embarrassingwisconsin if you have any more, stories about how terrible Senator Ron Johnson is. And, you know, do all the things on all the platforms for listening to the podcast. Maybe check out the Facebook page. Give it a like. I think that's about it. You have a good week, Charles.
You too, Pete.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Before we say goodbye, real quick, real lightning round type thing. See if you can do it. I'll just cut this out if it sucks. see if you can predict one thing that will happen in the news before I actually get the podcast edited and released.
Trump announces a new war.
Ooh, okay. That's a good one. What should I do? Okay, I got things. So we got the Supreme Court things taken care of. I wish I wouldn't have done this, and I didn't have anything prepared for myself. Ooh, what about something with England? Because Trump has an England trip coming up.
Yeah.
His British trip. When is the Putin summit?
It's going to be like, I think he's going to NATO first for their summit in Brussels, and then he's going to visit England to see the fat Trump baby balloon. And then he's going to Russia to meet with Putin to look into his soul.
Man, something to do with Britain. I don't know what to put my finger on. Something. They just lost their foreign secretary and some other guy.
And the Brexit secretary.
Yeah, something's up with that, and then him going there right at that time. I don't know what.
Well, it was planned for a while.
No, but I'm saying they just quit. It happens that Trump is going there now.
Oh, Britain becomes a 52nd state.
51st.
Well, we have to include Puerto Rico. We can't have odd numbers of stars.
I actually just saw a map recently on Reddit, r/vexiology, of a 51-state map, and it actually looked super cool. And I already hate all of the old people that hate that flag. But that doesn't exist. I already hate the people that hate that flag. Because it's not... It's not the way...
That's,
you know,
not what I saluted.
And it's like, my mom was born before, like, when... Like, my mom and dad, my parents were born when there were 48 states. And it's like, people like that would be super pissed off if we added another state because of, like, tradition or something. It's like, you were born... Like, in your lifetime, we've had states added. And by the way, the 48-star flag was pretty dope looking too, but we had to change it. That's life.
It's a little too boring. Need more stars.
I liked it. I have one right here. I'm looking at my 48 star flag.
Yeah, but all the stars are just kind of like rows and columns.
Okay. It's actually kind of hard to tell the. I think it's a little hard to tell the difference between it and 50. How many 49 star flags were there? There couldn't have been many. Did they already know they were getting the 50th state when they did the 49th, so they didn't bother making them? Like, was that an awkward 4th of July that year or something? I'm going to have to look into these. All right. See you next week, Charles. Did I lose you?
Alright, well, bye, people. I'll try and figure out why I lost Charles.
Some days it's sunny, some days it rains. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!